The largest American generation to date, the baby boom generation, is raising families and planning for retirement. So it's no surprise that investing for the future is a hot topic these days. But all the talk about what to do with your savings often obscures the fact that many Americans have very little socked away. Americans save less than half as much of their disposable income as do people in other big industrialized countries, not enough, according to many experts, to sustain their present living standards in the future. But financial planners say saving is possible, no matter what your income. It's all in how you handle your money, and perhaps how you think about it. Steve Tripoli of member station WBUR in Boston explains.
There are families that do handle their money well, but also quite a few that don't. One couple that didn't lives in semi-rural Middleborough, Massachusetts, not far from Cape Cod. Their names are...
Dwayne Sylvia.
Melanie Sylvia.
And in 1988, they were young and in debt. Credit card debt, mostly.
Oh, I was collecting them. I had a Discover. I had a two or three MasterCards, couple of Visas, American Distress.
It became like a status thing, you know, when you're young and you first get out of high school and college and you say, oh, these people, you know, think that we can have credit. You know, it's a status thing. You know, look how many credit cards I have and this is how far the limit is, and you get absorbed in that.
Dwayne and Melanie Sylvia got absorbed, all right, in credit card vacations, radio equipment, extravagant gifts, plus installment payments on two cars. Pretty soon, the debt mounted to $10,000. Their combined annual income was just $28,000. Inevitably, says Melanie Sylvia, it all came to a head.
I kept getting phone calls and phone calls and phone calls from the credit card companies asking for payments. And what finally happened was one of the companies, when they called, suggested CCCS.
The Consumer Credit Counseling Service, a nationwide nonprofit agency funded in part by businesses that are owed money. Counselors there sat down with the Sylvias.
And they went in nitty-gritty details, wanting to know what we spent our money on.
That was the start, but the Sylvias' story is hardly unique to this point. Independent financial planner Jim Pinney in Cambridge, Massachusetts, says predicaments like the Sylvias' are nothing new, even in households with six-figure incomes. He says people are always talking about why they can't save. Their mortgages are big, they're so busy they have to eat out all the time, child care costs a lot, they really need a good vacation.
The problem is that there's no end to that kind of conversation. And it's much more, in my opinion, a question of how a person looks at what it is that they're doing than it is the actual income. Most people only don't save because they're just too damn lazy to do it.
Harsh words, perhaps, but lots of financial planners are as sure as Penny that it's possible for people with modest incomes to save, because they've seen it repeatedly. Penny says he often sees it in immigrant families.
They just do whatever they have to do. I cannot tell you, they just decide. I mean, you live a certain way so that you have money left at the end of the week. You just do it. I've seen people like this, and the child doesn't go to Harvard. The child goes to UMass. Or you don't buy the Lexus, you buy the VW. You live where you have to live, and you live in the way that you have to live so that you can save.
That kind of discipline is especially important for lower-income families because their margin of error is smaller in planning their futures. But good money management's good for everyone, so why doesn't everyone do it? Some psychologists have studied how people handle money, and one of them, James Gottfirst in Los Angeles, says that people with persistent money problems often lapse into what he calls poverty thinking. They rationalize or ignore their overspending, letting defensive voices in their money-handling minds tell them that they really deserve things they can't afford, or that if they buy something now, they will be able to afford it by the time the payments come due, or even that it's someone else's fault when their finances fall apart. The funny thing is, people who are more careful with their money tend to be more satisfied with their lives than the big spenders, according to the money psychologists, which brings us to the family in this story that can handle money well. This family also lives in semi-rural Middleborough, Massachusetts, and also has a modest household income. Their names...
Dwayne Sylvia.
Melanie Sylvia.
That's right, Dwayne and Melanie Sylvia again, but a very different Dwayne and Melanie Sylvia from the debt-ridden couple of 1988. They paid off their debts by the end of 1992 and had a couple of kids. Melanie even gave up her teaching job to stay home with them. Dwayne switched jobs, and the household's income now is $35,000 a year, actually a little less, adjusted for inflation, than they were making in 1988. But things are better.
It's really kind of neat. We went from two people working and two jobs, and we weren't tithing at church either, to a situation where he had a new job, I stayed home from my job, we were tithing, all our bills were paid, and we were doing it all on one income. Plus, we managed to get a new van.
They do have one less family car these days because Dwayne uses his work truck for commuting. But now, even while giving a full 10% of their income to their church and feeding those two new mouths in the family, the Sylvias are also managing to save another $120 a month, which they put into stocks and mutual funds. They say they've pulled it off by just being a lot more careful.
The two of us together just watching and thinking more about what we're spending it on.
And then we look and see what we have left over for the week, and we see, you know, can we get the kids a pair of sneakers, or do we wait another week? You know, when it comes time to having a cookout, do we have the money for the extra food that it takes for the cookout? It is close. It is close, and we want to be responsible.
Dwayne Sylvia says the benefits of their new approach extend beyond just being out of debt. First, it just feels better.
For me, it's a confidence build, and helps me to know that I'm thinking of my children. So I really got to take a good look at, you know, what can I spend today and still keep for tomorrow.
Attitudes like that, says financial planner Jim Pinney, are the start of understanding the true power of money.
Money is essentially stored up choice making. It's stored up gasoline, stored up power. And as your bank accounts build up, your choices build up. The things that you can do build up. You can quit your job. You can move to some other place. You can do all kinds of things. It's like storing up an explosive ability to change your life.
People who apply that lesson have been called money masters by Kathleen Gurney, another psychologist who studies people and money. She says money masters are not the highest earners, but do tend to be more satisfied with their lives because they've learned that the stored up choice making Jim Pinney referred to is also stored up control of their destinies. Thinking about money that way is one of the best ways to join the millions of Americans who have money to invest for retirement, education, and other family needs. For National Public Radio, I'm Steve Tripoli in Boston.